Welcome to Versus History with Elliot Watson and Patrick O'Shaughnessy.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Versus History. This week, we have our special guest at Prohistoric Man, a.k.a. Connell Smith, in for a 15-minute frenzy.
Prohistoric Man, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Patrick. A pleasure, as always, to be back talking to yourself.
Our Residente Medieval expert, Connell Smith.
Yeah, although we're going further back today, aren't we? We're going back to the ancient world.
We've got you working overtime.
Yeah, one of my other areas that I really enjoy.
On that note, let's waste no time. It is a 15-minute frenzy, so the rules are you're going to get 15 minutes, Connell, just to talk about your subject of choice. But I suppose it's worth you telling us, what's it going to be?
So today I thought I'd talk to you and get you to grill me on Athenian democracy. So the ancient world, ancient Greece, what went on there. Democracy is something that we hear about lots, we know many of us live under. So talk about that, an ancient example, maybe pick out some similarities, differences, see what we can learn from it.
Sounds fantastic. All right, well, no time to waste. When we have an expert like you, we've got to get you for all you're worth. So I'm going to start the timer now. What's Athenian? What's democracy? What's Athenian democracy? Go.
Athenian means, I guess, from Athens. So Athens is the modern-day capital of Greece. Go back to the ancient times. We're talking somewhere around 700 BC through to maybe 300 BC, that sort of time.
That is old.
That is old. We're talking a big, powerful, influential city in Greece. At that time, Greece is split up into lots of different city-states, of which Athens is one of the most powerful, most influential. So we're talking about that, the city of Athens and the small area around it, a bit called Attica. And then democracy, we're talking about power of the people, if we go back to the ancient Greek etymology, the roots of it. So we're talking about a time period where there was what we call direct democracy in Athens. So where Athenian citizens voted on everything. So every decision that was being taken, they had a vote on, almost like a bit like a referendum, but with a smaller sample of them.
Fantastic. In 1:07, you've pretty much explained it all. Fantastic.
Oh, we're done. Are we?
Unfortunately, not for you, no. Okay, that brings us on to our second question. Why are we learning about today, or why is it worth knowing, or why is it significant? Over to you.
I think it's significant and interesting because, like I said, most of us, lots of us within the world live under democracy, and as historians we like to know where our roots come from, where we've come from, where we've picked up ideas, how lots of our language is shaped. So we talk about democracy now, we've picked up the language. And partly it's fascinating to see an experiment in democracy, a democracy that works very differently to the democracies that we tend to live in today. Because it's such a small place, they can be very direct in their democracy, whereas today we can't vote on everything. That's why we have politicians, MPs, etc. to do things for us. But there's lots of interesting parallels, similarities, legacies, and lots of our language and ideas about what's right and where democracy comes from. And
I'm going to curveball you, Mr. Smith, given that you're so clever. So is our democracy today in Britain a direct derivative of the Athenian democracy? Or
No. I'm understanding derivative as kind of coming from it directly. No, but the idea that people should have a say, I guess, is something that comes from the time. Athens, surprisingly, wasn't the only democracy at the time. It's the most famous one, basically because Athens is a big, powerful state at the time. They fight wars against Sparta, another state that people might have heard of. They fight along allied with Greeks against the Persians, and so we know them best. But there are a huge number of states in Greece at this time, of which quite a large number are democracies. But Athens is just the biggest, the most famous.
Well, you've perked our interest. Fantastic. How did this come about then, Mr. Smith? Tell us.
Well, I think as with anything in history, you tend to see a generally quite a slow, gradual process. It's not like in Athens there was a king and then all of a sudden the next day people decided, well, let's go around, let's have a democracy where we can all do whatever we want and we can vote on everything. So there's a period of a couple of hundred years where there's a reformer who comes along, a guy called Solon, who's a poet who has some ideas. Then we get ruled by some tyrants, a guy called some called the Pisistratids.
He sounds fun.
There's Pisistratus, and then his son Hippias, who takes over after him. Well, he actually is quite fun. He's quite benevolent. He's quite nice. And actually, the story kind of comes out of the word draconian. You might have heard the word draconian meaning extremely harsh. If you go further back, before all those people I was just talking about, there was a law code set down by a guy called Draco in ancient Athens, which basically prescribed death and extremely harsh punishment for everything. And there's a sense in which democracy is and benevolent rule comes out of that. But ultimately, democracy comes about because Athens powers itself, or has its strength, in its fleet.
We're talking about the naval.
We're talking naval, we're talking military. Basically, we often see throughout history that the system of government you have comes about in a way that supports a military, or you need military backing. In Athens and in ancient Greece, they had very much a citizen army. When you have your ships, they used to have ordinary Athenians rowing on them. So you have your banks of oars going down the side and everybody pulling on them. And
that sounds like hard work.
It sounds like way more hard work than you or I wish to be involved in. But that was kind of the foundation of Athenian power. And then there was... It's hard for us to trace through the sources specifically, but there seems to be a sense that there was therefore a growing desire among those people to have some power, some influence. And then eventually a chap called Cleisthenes comes along after we've had various people that I've mentioned, and he sets up the system in the direct democratic form that it's kind of at its peak.
Fantastic. We know why it's worth knowing. We know what it is. We know how it came about. How did it all work then, Connell?
Very, very complicatedly. I think most people, any students of politics, will know that in running a country, you tend to have three bodies. You have what's called the legislative, people who make laws. You have the executive, who are the people who execute or carry out those laws. And then you have the judiciary, the judges who kind of interpret. So I'll just kind of quickly perhaps take you through how those three things work.
Please do.
And that'll give us a bit of a sense of it. So in terms of the legislature, who gets to make laws in Athens, any male citizen is allowed to be part of this. You have meetings on a hill in Athens called the Pnyx, and basically any Athenian male citizen can go along to that meeting. The first 6,000 kind of pile in, and then that is parliament. So there's none of this kind of electing MPs or what have you. 6,000 men pile in, they make decisions, and whatever they say goes. That's the law. If they make a decision saying, you know, this is outlawed, then it is outlawed. So 6,000 people march in, direct votes. There's no parties, there's nothing like that.
Basically, sounds very efficient. Streamlined.
Up to a point. And anybody's invited to speak. They make a big point, whoever's presiding over it, they say any person can come up and speak. So the legislative is basically any man within Attica and the area surrounding Athens. We're talking a population of about 30,000 male citizens. Probably, interestingly, a population of about 250,000 who live in that area, but of whom 30,000 are free men who can vote. But the first 6,000 of those to pile in, they get to make the laws. Then in terms of carrying that out, you've got the government. The government is a council of 500 chaps. So one of the big things in Athens and in democracy is they don't want power in one person's hands. So you have 6,000 in your parliament. You have 500 in the council to spread out power, make sure nobody can do it. And this is my favourite thing about it. They used to choose, that 500 people were chosen for a year. And out of those 500 people, you would draw lots, and one person would be in charge of the government each day. So you'd almost change your president every single day, and you'd draw lots. So everybody could only do it once. You'd do it for a day. Although twice, you could serve twice in your life if you wanted to. So you might get 2 days
of
being executive power. So yeah, so they have complicated systems to make that work. But you can be in charge for 24 hours, but that council of 500 basically decides like what parliament does. And then to really cap it off and protect democracy, they have the law courts. So the judiciary, they have juries. So that's another thing that perhaps is a legacy that we pick up on. And they have, again, massive juries, because that's how you stop tyrants and people gaining too much power. So a jury, the smallest a jury would be in ancient Athens, 501. and it could,
interesting number.
Could range up to 1500. So basically, anybody could go and seek justice, and if you did that, you're going to be tried by at least 500 of your peers to make sure that, you know, the people get to make a decision on your case. So it, that's kind of how it works. Basically, get as many people involved as often as possible to ensure that the people are making all of the decisions.
Fantastic. You have painted that so clearly for us. Thank you very, very much indeed. Okay, you've got about 6 minutes left, so absolutely no rush. Mr. Smith, Connell, would you highlight any similarities between Athenian democracy and democracy today, wherever in the world you may find it?
Well, I think in terms of similarities, obviously you've got those bodies of government.
Yeah.
And that's the fact that they tend to work in some way is something that, has been picked up on. And so that's a big similarity. I think the idea that people should have a say is a massive similarity to today's democracy. If we're thinking about England, there's always talk about your vote counts, you should express your democratic right. The idea that the people should have a say and should be able to decide things is a huge part of it. Today, obviously, it's slightly different in that if you go to Parliament, there are MPs voting, but they are meant to represent their constituents' interests. So the idea is they're there to represent the people and vote for what the people would really want. So in that similarity, in that there is a bit of a similarity. Other similarities, I mean the use of jury, the realization that you're trying to avoid control of power in one hand, I think that would be a big similarity, but then they're not the same. They're operating in a very different sphere, and particularly because Athens is working in such a small area, it works very differently to some of the large democracies. So if you think about the countries there, you're talking about huge numbers of people, and so they can't work in exactly the same ways.
So the idea, the concept of checks and balances is a legacy.
Absolutely.
I have to give you another curveball because I'm so interested. Was anyone like Thomas Paine inspired by this? The 1776 Declaration of Independence, French Revolution, 1832 Great Reform Act, any of that? Or am I making...
No, I don't think you are. I think that the legacy of it just permeates throughout so much of history. Even in the medieval world, they're looking back to classical authors and things like that. The Greek and Roman culture is such a thing. Even through to modern day, we're looking at... I don't think you can draw those direct comparisons. I don't think people like Thomas Paine are looking at Athenian democracy and saying, let's do that. I think... it's impractical, but in terms of the ideals, I think those very much permeate through.
Next question then is main differences to today.
I think main differences are around population.
Okay.
Around equality and who's allowed to it. So I think most democracies today will acknowledge that pretty much everybody should have the vote, with the exclusion of maybe
the young.
There's debate about whether prisoners should have the right to vote and things like that, but they're very much very small sections of society who are excluded. In Athens, it's the majority of society who is excluded. I mentioned earlier how you've got 30,000 people who can be citizens out of a population of 250,000. If you're female, no, you can't vote. If you're from abroad, no, you can't vote. If you're slave, no, you can't vote. So that's a big difference. There isn't the understanding in Athens that everybody should have a say. It's every free man should have a say. And I think that's a big difference to democracies today. And then I guess the final similarity that I'd pick out would be that sometimes it's hard to get people to participate. If we look at democracy today, quite often you'll look at elections and there'll be an extremely low turnout. And this isn't something that's a new phenomenon. Even in ancient Athens, they had to try and get people to vote. So particularly later on in the kind of 4th century, they start going down to the market day on days when the assembly is due to be meeting, and somebody runs around with a bit of rope that is painted red, and they try and get paint on you. And basically, if you have paint on you and you don't turn up to the assembly later that day, you can be fined. So they have weird systems in place, but some of the similar problems to what we have today in terms of that. That lack, or that apathy, I guess.
So a bit like Australia, some people must vote.
Yeah, absolutely. And a slightly different method of
enacting it. Very much so. Okay, then the next question, I suppose, is our logical next step. You've highlighted the similarities for us. What are the key or main differences in your view, Connell? Away you go.
So I think the first main difference is in terms of the size, really. We're dealing with a much smaller area than democracies today tend to be. So Athens and its surrounding area, we're talking 250,000 people, only 30,000 of whom can vote. Most democracies that we're looking at in the world today, we're talking millions of people who are making decisions. So in that sense, the system that operates there can't operate in modern-day democracies. I think we're also seeing a difference in terms of the idea today within democracy that everybody should have a say, that regardless of who you are, your social rank, your gender, etc., you should have a vote. However, in ancient Athens, only free citizens are allowed to have the vote. So we're talking 30,000 people. If you're a woman, you're not allowed to vote. If you're a foreigner, you're not allowed to vote. If you're a slave, you're not allowed to vote. So I guess there's a more exclusive membership to the club than there are in more modern democracies.
Fantastic. Understood. Okay, then, to summarise, I suppose, what do you find most surprising about Athenian democracy? Or if I were studying it in your class, what would I be surprised about?
I think you'd probably be surprised about some of the novel ways in which they come up with dealing with things. So one of the methods that they have, which is quite surprising, is they have this thing called ostracism.
That sounds painful.
Less painful than you might think. The word ostracize that we use today, where you kind of cast someone out, comes from that. Every year they could vote to ostracize, to send out one person for 10 years, basically as a check on if somebody gets too big for their boots. So they'd all meet up and vote, and somebody can get kicked out of Athens for 10 years. They get to keep all their property, they're not a criminal, nothing like that, but they just get turfed out. So you'd find some quite novel solutions.
Like a political sin bin.
Yeah, it is, exactly. So 10 years, it's like 10 minutes in rugby. But yeah, so I think that would be surprising. I think you'd also be surprised by how fickle the democracy, or maybe they wouldn't be, maybe my students in my class wouldn't be surprised by how fickle democracy is, but Athenians have a tendency to change their mind. So, for example, they lose a battle and they decide to execute the generals who were in charge because they shouldn't have lost that battle. And six out of the eight generals who lose this battle get put on trial. They get killed. And then later on, the Athenians decide, well, actually, that was a bit of a bad idea. And then they put on trial the man who convinced them to kill those generals. So you have that changeability. Another time they decide to go and kill all of the male citizens of a town, of a place called Mytilene, which revolted against the Athenians and enslave all the women and children. And then the next day they go, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And they decide, they have this thing called the Mytilene debate. And they say, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And they have to double man a trireme, like a boat, and send it flying across the Aegean Sea overnight to try and catch up with the other boat that they sent and say, actually, don't kill them all. Don't enslave them all. It's not too bad. So you see that. And so I guess that would be quite a surprising thing to see, how quickly the mind can shift and decisions can change.
Brutally accountable, yet also absolutely very reflective. Okay, Mr. Smith, that's your 15 minutes done. That was superb. I suppose the final thing for us to do now is, you've got 30 seconds just to summarise any, or re-highlight any points that you wish. 30 seconds. What should we remember about Athenian democracy? Go.
I think we should remember that it is the origin of much of the language that we have surrounding democracy. We think of words like demagogue, somebody who stirs up people. That comes from the assembly that they had. So we've got lots of that language, lots of the systems, the idea that you have a judiciary, an executive, a government, that you have people making the laws, and that it's people who ultimately should have the say. I think lots of those ideas stem from ancient Greece. So I think people should take that away, that the origin of lots of the ideas that we see in the world today. And also that, you know, history is weird. People did weird things, even within systems like this. But in a pattern that matches much of the stuff today, human nature doesn't really change.
Thank you very much, prehistoric man. Conall Smith, that was sublime. You're not going to get much better education in 15 minutes than you've just offered gratis there. Thank you very, very much indeed.
A pleasure.
If you'd like any more information on Athenian democracy, which no doubt you will, you can tweet Conall directly at Prehistoric Man. Well, it's been great to have you on the show. Hope to see you back soon.
I'm sure we will.
Versus History. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you for downloading and listening to this edition of Versus History. Subscribe. Visit us at our website, www.versushistory.com.